Which leads me to a Super Bowl of the Saints and Patriots, and I have the Patriots winning the Super Bowl, and I don't feel great about that necessarily either. But I just feel like, yeah, I'm a Brady guy, and I put my trust in him. You know, even though he lost two Super Bowls, he left the field with his team leading in each of those two losses with less than a minute left in the game, and the Patriots were in front, but the defense couldn't hold the lead. I just feel like Tom Brady's doing another Super Bowl. Now, everybody, report to your gaming website of choice or your casino sportsbook of choice and go put your money down, because the Hip Hop Sports Report has all the answers. You know what I'm saying? Them other podcasts have stepped on. We got that ring. What a game! What a game, what a game, what a game. You know what, folks? I think y'all already know this, but I've been waiting all day to get behind a microphone so I can holler at y'all again. I mean, like, on the edge of my chair, you know what I'm saying? I got a 9-to-5 gig, and I'm chomping at the bit, waiting to punch the clock so I can get the hell up out of there so I can come talk to you people, because I got a lot to say. Preseason podcast of the year. Back again, Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Jay Hicks flying solo this evening. Got a lot to talk about, y'all. Super Bowl 49 is in the books, in the history books, in the annals, and it'll go down as one of the great Super Bowls we've ever seen. Definitely one of the great Super Bowls I've ever seen. And it's crazy because I feel like the last like 10 years, 10 to 15 years, basically ever since Tom Brady and Bill Belichick kind of came together in New England and started this thing. Because all of their Super Bowls have been close, and they've been in it six times. So when you factor in all of those games, we've had a lot of really great Super Bowls in recent years. Didn't have that, seems like, as much coming up as a kid. But, yeah, man, it was incredible stuff. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast again tonight is February 2nd, 2015. That damn groundhog saw his damn shadow. So we got six more weeks of damn winter. So thanks for nothing. Quickly. Find us on iTunes, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. You can hit us up there. I just found out that I was on, I think, something called Podbay. I didn't even know I was on there, but we're on Podbay. So find the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast there as well. Subscribe, rate, like, comment, all of that type of social media stuff that you kids like to do these days with your fancy telephone devices and what have you. Hit us on the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Also, you can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/HHSReport. If you don't follow us on Twitter, you should be, because some interesting activity happened there last evening. We'll get into that in a little bit. Also, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/HHSReport. Super Bowl 49, Seattle Seahawks, New England Patriots. What an amazing game, man. Again, I just can't say enough how spectacular of a football game that was. Both teams, I mean, those were the two best teams in the league. And I really feel like it's easy to sit back and criticize and second guess and play armchair Monday morning quarterback and all that type of stuff. But in the heat of the moment, man, that was some damn good football. And some damn good officiating, too, I should point out. Because the referees let these guys play. They were physical, but it was competitive. Not a lot of blown calls. Nothing egregious. The coaching, there was some coaching, questionable coaching decisions. We'll get into that, but all in all, both teams were very much prepared. There weren't any penalties, you know what I'm saying? No, not a lot of stupidity until the very end of the game. It was just a fantastic game. You really can't say that enough, that these are the two teams that needed to be there. You had the best team in the AFC, unequivocally. And you had the defending champion out the NFC, who maybe wasn't necessarily as good as they were last year. But they were just as high on championship medal and all that stuff that rolls around inside of a player's chest. You know what I'm saying? They got a lot of that stuff. And it was a fantastic game. I was waiting all weekend. I mean, these last 2 weeks have been hellacious for me personally, particularly because I had a vested interest in seeing Tom Brady succeed and perform well. I'm not going to run from that. But additionally, I just want to see a good football game, and I knew that we had two really good football teams here. And to have to sit through all that Deflategate nonsense. I even had to talk about it on the podcast. Yuck. I didn't want to do that. But I felt like I had no choice because it was all everybody could focus on. It was all the water cooler talk and all that stuff. All that stuff's behind us. Let me jump into the game real quick. Now, when Javon Curse, that's his name, right? I think that's his name. Or is that the name of the defensive end? I got to look up his name now. Jermaine Curse, that's his name. Jermaine Curse. Thought it was the freak. No. When Jermaine Curse caught that pass deep down the sideline inside the final minute of the game, I was in complete shock. And if you follow me on Twitter, you saw the tweets that I was sending out, like, Brady just needs to stop here. After they scored that first touchdown pass to Amendola in the fourth quarter. And I'm like, Brady and the pass just need to stop. The defense needs to get Seattle off the field immediately to give Tom a chance to finish this thing on his terms. Because he didn't really have that chance in the last two New York Giants games in the Super Bowl. Well, he actually did. And he got the touchdown he needed to Edelman to take the lead. But he's kind of still left a lot of time left. And so I was concerned that Seattle was going to just march it right back down and win the game. First play in the series, they go to Lynch, matched up with Jamie Collins, a linebacker, and he catches like a 35-yard pass down the sideline. And that was before the two-minute warning on the front side. They still had, I think, three timeouts. So it was not looking good for the Patriots. I mean, it was not looking good in any kind of way. And when Curse caught that pass on the sideline, man, I was apoplectic. I was in disbelief. I was stupefied. It was, because the David Tyree thing, everybody instantly flashed back to the David Tyree catch. And rightfully so, because not only was that the most unbelievably lucky catch in the history of sports, I think we can move beyond football. We're talking catches in baseball, catches in any sport. It was the luckiest catch ever in the history of catches. Was that David Tyree catch. And you know how I know it was the luckiest catch ever? Because that dude never caught another pass in the NFL ever again. That was his last reception in the NFL. If he had any real talent, he would have made another reception at some point in the league. I think the next year he got injured, and he sat out like much of the season, came back, never really made it on a team again. The Giants ended up cutting him, and nobody ever picked him up, and that was it. He was done. All done, career over. That was his last catch in the NFL. So that dude would be a nobody if it weren't for that one specific play. Now, Curse is a better receiver than Tyree was. I mean, he's made a lot of big catches in these last two seasons. But for him to make that catch after Malcolm Butler did a tremendous job deflecting the pass, I was just thinking, like, there is no way that the Patriots are going to lose again in the Super Bowl off of a near miracle reception, because we saw it with David Tyree and we saw it again with Mario Manningham in the second Super Bowl against the Giants. Now that one had a lot more skill involved. Eli did not completely shut his eyes. I think he had one eye open when he threw the pass, and Manningham had about a 3-inch window of which to catch the ball and get both feet down in bounds just on the sideline before he got blasted running full speed. It was an unbelievable catch, but there was some skill involved there. There was no skill with David Tyree, and there was little skill in this Curse reception on the sideline, because Butler deflects the pass. He did his job, defended the ball well. I mean, is it possible? You know how they keep statistics of passes defensed? Is it possible to get a pass defensed and a reception on the same play? Because that's essentially what that was. Malcolm Butler did his job. He locked up Curse, made a great deflection. Brandon Browner came over, didn't want to run into the guys. He jumps over him, and the ball was just floating out there like Antonio Freeman on Monday Night Football, and he just happens to make the catch. And you got to give credit to Butler for having the wherewithal to touch him down there, because he could have got up and ran in for a touchdown. But, I mean, I was just in disbelief when that pass happened, and I was thinking, again, as strictly speaking as a sports fan, not again. There is no way Tom Brady is going to lose another Super Bowl like this. Another Super Bowl like this. It was unreal. In the same stadium. And then, to make matters worse, just after that, it's like first and goal inside a minute. And now the Patriots have to make a decision on whether or not to let Seattle score. It was the same thing that happened in the last Giants Super Bowl. This game mirrored both of those Giants Super Bowls down the stretch. I've never seen anything like that. This was straight out of Shakespeare or something. I mean, this was a play. This was a Tarantino flick or something. I mean, like, Kenneth Hicks couldn't have written a better book than this. I mean, the way this was boiling down, I mean, I've never would have expected that this game would have been like the Giants Super Bowl in 07 and the Giants Super Bowl in 2011 for the Patriots crammed into one finish. And that's exactly what we were looking at. New England had no idea whether or not to even let this dude score. Did we let Beast Mode walk in the end zone to try to preserve clock so Tom Brady has time to drive us down and maybe get us in position to kick a game-tying field goal and force overtime? That was the conundrum that the Patriots coaching staff was met with. And speaking of Brady, did you see the look on his face when that pass was caught? I had the exact same look on my face, just like, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. Anyways, getting back to the Lynch series at that point, it was first and goal for those series of plays. And again, they have to figure out whether or not to let this dude score. New England winning, they exercised so many demons last night. Because again, it was in the same stadium as the David Tyree catch. And it was like those two giant Super Bowls merged into one at the end. Like, for Tom Brady to lose two Super Bowls like that and then lose last night's Super Bowl like that. Tom Brady would have had to have blown up an orphanage in a past life. That would have been the only reason he would deserve this kind of punishment. That was just cruel and unusual punishment from the football gods. And that was until Malcolm Butler, I almost called him Malcolm Smith, who was last year's Super Bowl MVP for Seattle. Malcolm Butler, who was working at Popeyes before he ended up getting on the New England Patriots. That dude made the greatest defensive play in Super Bowl history. I don't care about James Harrison's play, whatever. This play saved the game. They were 1 yard out. I thought Lynch was going to score on that first down handoff, and they barely tackled him at the 1 yard line. And then it was weird because they had to decide whether or not they wanted to let him in. And the clock was running too. So meanwhile, I think it had to be maddening on that sideline for New England because they didn't know what to do. They were in a situation where the clock is ticking. They can't even emotionally recover from the Jermaine Kearse reception. And now they have to figure out, well, what do we do now? Because do we let them score? Do we not let them score? Do we call a timeout to preserve time? Meanwhile, the clock is just rolling. It's just rolling. And I think because Seattle kind of had the game in the bag, they were kind of playing it cool, which was fine. And the clock, next thing you know, the clock rolls all the way down to like 20 seconds. And at that point, you know, as each second rolled by with Belichick not calling the timeout, obviously the likelihood of him calling a timeout dwindled. And what you saw was Belichick, I'm sure flashing back to the last Giants Super Bowl, where Ahmad Bradshaw kind of scored a go-ahead touchdown on accident with 40 seconds left or whatever. And they let him score, which seemed like the proper thing to do by New England. And they're in the same circumstance again. But again, there's only 20 seconds left. So it's like, well, maybe we can stop him here. And if we stop him, now it's like third down. And maybe there's less than 20 seconds. Now maybe they don't want to necessarily run it. Maybe they call that last timeout because Seattle had one in the bag. Maybe they call that last timeout. And now it's a two-play situation. You stop them two plays from getting 1 yard, and you're the champions, rather than having to deal with going 50 yards down the field to get in field goal range again. So I think all those wheels had to be turning in Bill Belichick's head. It was really remarkable stuff, and you can't say enough about the reception by Malcolm Butler. That was just out of this world stuff, and bravo for coaching, right? Let's give coaching a hand clap, because he said in a post-game interview, Butler did, that they practiced this on Thursday. They practiced that play. They watched film. They practiced that play on Thursday where Seattle ran the same formation, and he got beat. Malcolm Butler got beat on that play in short yardage, and Belichick grabbed him by the scruff and said, "Look here, young man. This is not how you play this. This is not how you play the cornerback position. You need to go ahead and jump this route because we know that that's what they're going to do in this situation." Blah blah blah. Fast forward to last night, Brandon Browner, who ironically played for Seattle last year, so maybe he had a little added insight. Shout out to Brandon Browner for getting two consecutive Super Bowl rings for two different teams and two different conferences, no less. He then says to Butler, hey, keep an eye out for this. We saw this formation before. You got beat in practice. You know what to do. And the kid stepped up. He took off like a rocket before. It seems like as soon as Wilson dropped back and cocked his arm back to release the football, he was already making a break towards the ball. He collides with Ricardo Lockett and knocks him off the spot, knocked him on the ground. I mean, and that's how, that's the force with which he came at that football. He drove on the football with no hesitation, not even for a split second, not a drop of hesitation in his body. He rolled the dice and went for it, and he won. And it was great because Butler was the same dude that gave up the pass to Kurtz before, so he felt like he had let the team down. The second time we've seen that in the playoffs, we saw it with Dallas, where the kid, his name escapes me, but you know the kid that sacked Matt Stafford, recovered the fumble, tried to run with it, and fumbled it, and then Detroit picked it back up and had a chance to win still. That kid, and then he turned around and sacked, fumbled Stafford again, and went, recovered the football again, and the Cowboys won the game. So it was the second time we've seen a young player like that redeem himself, so to speak. So that, I thought, was really cool. Man, that was a great game. And it was the best thing that happened to the NFL, too, was that it was a great game, to coming off all that Deflategate nonsense. Again, the Patriots exercised 1,000 demons in one night. Both of those giant Super Bowls, the Deflategate stuff, the Spygate stuff, people just running off at the frickin' mouth with just the dumbest commentary you'd ever hear. Like, oh, the Patriots, they haven't won a championship since Spygate. Really? Really? They've been to two more Super Bowls, and they had the lead in each of those games inside 60 seconds left in the game. They had the lead in both games, just like they did last night. It was the same thing, except a bad break here or there went against them in those games, whereas last night, a bad break went in their favor. So they caught a break, I should say. And it was the same thing, though. But everybody's throwing out the Spygate thing like they can't win without cheating. Even though everybody in the league was taping people at the time, and New England ended up getting caught, and that was only after the Jets got caught spying on them the year before, but nobody remembers that. It's just the dumbest, just the stuff that people say, man. People just really don't know the facts. And that's why I'm glad you guys come to Hip Hop Sports Report, man, because I do my homework, man. I'm diligent about this here. I try my best to research stuff, and I do it for fun because I love to do it, but I mean, I do it so I can then pass that information along to you. That's what I'm here for. So, looking again back at the game itself, Gronkowski, I'm just looking down at my notes on my phone. Gronkowski was a big factor, obviously. Gronk, I think he had, let's see, what do you have? I'm looking at the box score here. Gronk had 6 catches for 68 yards and a touchdown. He had the big touchdown in the first half. Every time he got matched up with KJ Wright, it was iron curtains for KJ Wright. You know what I'm saying? It was a bad look. I'm surprised Pete Carroll allowed it to happen as much as he did. Like, once he beat him for the first touchdown, I said, y'all got to come up with something different. Whenever they split Gronkowski out wide, y'all got to do something else. And he beat him twice, just like a wide receiver. That dude is a tremendous athlete. And we saw Gronk on the final drive. He caught a big pass going over the middle as Brady climbed the pocket and hit Gronkowski for a big gain over the middle. I mean, the crossing routes that New England ran was something that kind of was a thorn in the side of the Seahawks all night, because we saw Edelman catch a big one over the middle in the first half. Gronkowski caught one in the second half. Those little short and intermediate throws, we didn't see much deep from Brady, but I think that was part of the game plan. If you recall last week on the podcast, I said to you guys, my biggest concern was that Seattle was going to keep everything in front of them and just rock the New England receivers every time they caught the ball, similar to what they did to Denver last year. And there was a little bit of that, especially Edelman, who, by the way, is tough as nails. They did the same thing with Edelman. Edelman got rocked by Cam Chancellor in the fourth quarter. He got up and kept running. And I don't want to hear any of that concussion stuff from any sore loser Seahawk fans or whatever. I don't want to hear none of that. Because Russell Wilson might have just pulled the same stunt last week where he was possibly concussed, didn't follow the protocol, didn't do anything, came right back in the game and kept playing. So I'm not saying that Wilson was concussed or wasn't. Same thing with Edelman. We don't know. They both looked a little weary after taking those hits. But Seattle fans can't complain about Edelman not going through the protocol after Wilson didn't do it last week. So that's all I'm saying. But again, the Patriots just keeping everything short, keeping everything in front of them, in front of the Seattle defense. They were taking what the defense gave them. I guess the best way to summarize the Patriots' game plan, if you had to boil it down to one word, their game plan for attacking the vaunted Legion of Boom defense was patience. They beat him with patience. That's what they did. Tom Brady loves long scoring drives. Historically, he's that's his bread and butter. I mean, I think he'd rather go, you know, you want to call it dink and dunk. That kind of has a pejorative connotation to it. But, you know, I prefer to say that he took what the defense gave him, if you want to be more optimistic about it. But those short and intermediate throws, that was what Seattle gave him. That's what was open. And Brady capitalized it time and again. And at each time, you know, he's picking up first downs. He's hitting Vereen out of the backfield. He's hitting Amendola. He'll shake one tackler, pick up 7 yards. He hits Edelman. He'll pick up 9 yards. Just that little short stuff, but, I mean, it worked. Brady threw one really bad pass in the first half that should have resulted in some points for Seattle. Or, excuse me, for New England. But aside from that, he was excellent. Even the interception he threw to Bobby Wagner, that interception was more of a great play by Wagner than it was by a bad play by Brady, because he kind of darted back in front and made a great pick, just like Butler did against Russell Wilson. So, I mean, yeah, Brady, he was magnificent. I mean, he threw the ball 50 times. I said on Twitter before the game, I expect Tom Brady to throw a pick or two in this game, but I also expect him to win the game. He threw the ball 50 times against the Legion of Boom, y'all, and he threw 13 incompletions out of 50 attempts. He threw 4 touchdowns. He was only sacked once. I had people telling me before the game on Saturday that Seattle's pressure was going to get to Brady. Y'all, they're going to get it. I'm like, I put it in the article, y'all, right there on hiphopsportsreport.com. Seattle's pass rush, not all it's cracked up to be, not as good as last year. I said it. And to be fair, it helped that Cliff Avril got injured and missed the rest of the game, so that factored into it. But Brady was, he got pressured a few times, especially up the middle by Michael Bennett in those middle quarters. That dude was awesome last night. They couldn't block him up the middle for quite a while. But aside from that, Brady navigated the pocket pretty well, and he was pretty comfortable. He was jittery on that one interception, the first one. That was a bad throw. But aside from that, Brady was lights out. You know, all in all, man, it felt like the better team won the game. It felt like the better team won the game because New England dominated basically the first quarter, the second quarter, and the fourth quarter. So, despite the fact that it was close throughout, you still saw New England doing basically what they wanted to do on both sides of the ball for the majority of the game. Aside from a horrendous third quarter in which Seattle really got rolling, New England did what they set out to do. They executed the game plan. They shut down Seattle's offense for the first quarter and a half. Seattle couldn't get anything going until 5 minutes left in the half. The fact that New England gave up a touchdown in 28 seconds, 80-yard drive, was inexcusable. It reminded me of the Green Bay game where Jordy Nelson beat Revis for like a 50-yard touchdown at the end of that game, or at the end of that first half, and New England ended up losing that game. So that was kind of a problem for them, it looked like, a problem for the Pats. But nevertheless, they were able to navigate that, and they outscored them 14-0 in the fourth quarter, so I don't know. I'm just looking over my notes here, man, for a few other things that I can remember from the game last night. Al Michaels called the game, and he called just another memorable sporting moment that had Al Michaels' name attached to it. That's crazy. Chris Matthews, speaking of undrafted rookie free agents, that dude, I think he was on the Cleveland Browns practice squad or something like that. If that dude got cut by the Browns, I have no faith in my football team, the team that I rock with the most. I mean, this guy's out here making plays in the Super Bowl. He's just jumping over dudes and catching passes and catching touchdowns and everything else. You got to take your hat off to Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick for switching up the matchup. Brandon Browner was moved to, and he's a bigger corner. Browner is like 6'4 or whatever. They moved him on to Matthews later in the game. That was a very bright move because Matthews was just too big for whoever was guarding him before, Logan Ryan or Arrington, whichever one of those DBs it was. That was a smart tactical decision by the Patriots. There was just a lot of back and forth between the coaching in this game. It's just really, really good stuff. Just really good football. The chain of events was crazy too. Just the fact that we had, and I've talked about it already, but the fact that we had Detroit get their heart broken by Dallas. Dallas get their heart broken by Green Bay. Green Bay gets their heart broken by Seattle. And so I'm like on Twitter, I think I may have even said it on the site, like, is Seattle going to get their heart broken too? and sure enough, lo and behold, there you have it, man. I mean, it was unlike anything we've seen in the playoffs, I don't think. At least not that I can recall. The stuff at the end of the game, let me throw out two things I did not like about the Seahawks. And I got a lot of love and respect for the Seahawks. I picked them to win it last year. The way they carry themselves largely is how I wish the Browns would carry themselves. I see there's a lot of qualities in the Seahawks that make me wish that my Browns were like them. Having said that, what we saw from Doug Baldwin in the end zone, come on, man. Well, I mean, like, I already stopped liking Doug Baldwin. I never disliked Doug Baldwin before. And again, none of this is personal, but this is just me speaking as a fan and observer of the game. I can't stand Doug Baldwin. That dude sucks, okay? I mean, just the way that he was so defiant after that NFC Championship game with nobody believed in us, when in actuality, everybody believed in you, that was ridiculous. The fact that he's going toe-to-toe with Deion Sanders in the week leading up to the Super Bowl, sitting there calling out Deion for saying you was all right. Yeah, Doug Baldwin, you are all right. You caught one pass yesterday. And granted, it was a touchdown, but you only got open because Darrelle Revis got picked by the referee. So come on with that. And then this touchdown celebration, he made it look like he was taking a dump with the football. That's not funny or creative. I mean, it was just whack. I mean, so Doug Baldwin, come on. Aside from him, individually, I should say, the Seahawks team, y'all went out like some suckers at the end of that game. Starting that fight, that's a sucker move, man. That's a bitch move right there. I'm not even going to sugarcoat that. That's exactly what that was. I mean, you got beat. You got bested by a better team. They were better than you for the majority of the game. They had the lead for much of the game. And granted, Seattle seized control in the third quarter, and it looked bleak for the Pats. But for you guys to give that game away like that, to the extent that you did, and then to not even allow the Patriots to win with class and dignity because you yourself were so angry, I don't know if it's yourselves or at Pete Carroll or whoever, that was not a good look for y'all. So starting that fight, you know what I'm saying, like I said, that was a bitch move because you being a sore loser at that point. Marshawn Lynch never talks to the media. We understand that. After the game, he's like pushing cameras down and stuff. Like, it's one thing to, like, not say anything and reserve comment. It's another thing to, like, actively put the hand up to the camera and knock the camera down, like you know, or cuss at the cameras like Chris Webber did after he called the timeout back in college. You know what I'm saying? Anything like that, you just being a sucker and a sore loser, basically. So that was kind of hard to watch. And then Richard Sherman. I got to take a break before I talk about Richard Sherman, because I want to apologize to him. Y'all see. Let's hit some music right quick.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Turn the music up. Turn me down. Google. Let's go get him again. This time is for the money, my nigga. Brooklyn, stand up.
Never been a nigga this good for this long, this hood, or this pop, this hot, or this strong, with so many different flows. This one's for this song. The next one I switch up. This one will get bit up. These fucks too lazy to make up shit. They crazy, they don't paint pictures, they just trace me. You know what? Soon they forget where they pluck. They hold style from the try to reverse the outcome. I'm like, come
I'm not a biter, I'm a writer for myself and others. I say a big verse, I'm only bigging up my brother, bigging up my barrel. I'm big enough to do it, I'm that barrel. Plus I know my own flow is foolish. So the rings and things you sing about, bring them out. It's hard to yell when the barrel's in your mouth. I'm in new sneakers, new cedars, few divas. What more can I tell you? Let me spell it for you. W-I-L-L-I-E. Nobody truer than H-O-V. And I'm back for more. New York's ambassador. Prime Minister, back to finish my business up. Rain in the drought, stuffing on hoes, brushing off my shirt, but ain't nothing on my clothes, set my chain, my name, Young H.O., pitch the yay faithful, even if they patrol, I make payroll, Benz payphone, friends they roll, private jets down to Turks and Caicos, Chris Caseloads, I don't give a shit, nigga, one life to live, I can't let a day go by without me being fly, fresh to death. Head to toe to the day I rest. And I don't wear jerseys, I'm 30 plus. Give me a crisp pair of jeans, nigga, button up. S dots on my feet, make my cycle complete. What more can I say? Google play the beat. We gon' let this ride into the hook. I'ma snap my fingers on this. What more can I say to you? Get my chrome man on. Let's go! Now you know your ass is Willy when they got you in the mag. Like half a Billy, and your ass ain't Lily White, that mean that shit you write must be illy. Either that or your flow is silly, it's both. I don't mean to boast, but damn if I don't brag. Them crackers gon' act like I ain't on the ass. The Martha Stewart, that's far from Jewish. Far from a Harvard student, just had the balls to do it. And no, I'm not doing it, in fact, I'm just previewing it. This ain't the show, I'm just EQing it. 1-2, when I won't stop abusing it. Groupie girl, stop false accusing it. Back to the music, the Maybach roof is translucent. Niggas got a problem, Houston. What up, B? They can't shut up me. Shut down I, not even P.E. I'm a ride. God forgive me for my brash delivery. But I remember vividly what these streets did to me. So picture me, let these clowns nitpick at me. Paint me like a pickaninny. I would literally kiss T.T. in the forehead. Tell her please forgive me to squeeze into your forehead. I'm not the one to score points off. In fact, I got a joint to knock your points off. Young, over the guard, nigga, blasphemy. I'm at the Trump International, ask for me. I ain't never scared. I'm everywhere, you ain't never there. Nigga, why would I ever care? Pound for pound, I'm the best to ever come around here. Excluding nobody, look what I embody. The soul of a hustler, I really ran the street. CEO's mind, that marketing plan was me. And no, I ain't get shot up a whole bunch of times. I make up shit in a whole bunch of lines. And I ain't animated like, say, a Busta Rhyme. But the real shit you get when you bust down my lines. Add that to the fact I went plat a bunch of times. Times that by my influence on pop culture. I supposed to be number one on everybody list. We'll see what happens when I no longer exist. Fuck this. What more
can I say? Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, Super Bowl 49 recap. Richard Sherman. Let me tell y'all what happened last night. So, Richard Sherman, I wrote an article last week on the website, and you all saw it on HHSR, where I praised Richard Sherman as a great example for what a black athlete can be, and how he's kind of breaking down some stereotypes to a degree. How he's misrepresented sometimes in the media because they think he's a punk or a malcontent or whatever. And I don't agree with everything that Richard Sherman says and does, but a lot of what he does do, I think it's misrepresented, and I don't think it's always fair. And so I wrote an article and I praised Richard Sherman. You know, dude grew up in the streets, came from Compton, made it out, went to Stanford, was a star academic, and turned into a fantastic football player. Then last week I had my cousin Vinny, Vince Hicks, comes on to the show and trashes Richard Sherman. Now, in fairness, he did say Richard Sherman had terrific ball skills, and that because he played receiver, you know, he's one of the best at that. And I agree, Richard Sherman, he has his eyes in the backfield looking at the quarterback probably better than any other defensive back in the league today. And that's why he catches so many interceptions, because he's always looking for the ball. He's terrific at that. Having said that, I understood everything that where Vince was coming from, because Vince didn't say anything that was wrong as far as Sherman not always necessarily matching up with the other team's best receiver. Last night, Richard Sherman, after the Seahawks went up 24-14 at the time, they were up 10 in the third quarter, they put the camera right on Sherman on the sideline, and he's doing the 2-4, 2-4, look at the scoreboard, 2-4. Now, that was after Doug Baldwin scored on Revis. Revis wears number 24, Darrell Revis for the Patriots, who's regarded by many as the best cornerback in the league, better than Sherman himself. I don't know what Sherman was implying when he did that. I don't know if he was implying that Revis was wearing number 24 and he got beat by Doug Baldwin, even though Baldwin could not get open all night if not for getting help from the referee, literally. Doug Baldwin caught one pass last night. That was the only reception he had. Other than that, Revis completely shut him down. I'm looking at a stat line. Doug Baldwin had one catch for 3 yards last night. I don't know if Sherman was saying 2-4 as in look at Revis, like this is the guy that y'all think is the truth, like that's the dude, like 2-4. Or if he was saying 2-4 as in the scoreboard, because Seattle had just scored their 24th point and had gone up by 10 in the third quarter. I don't know which one he was doing. I thought that the commentators made it sound like he was talking about Revis. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But in any ways, he's like miming to the number 2 and the number 4 with his fingers right in front of the screen. You all saw it. Fast forward to after the game, I was feeling pretty good about myself. Why? Because we got yet another prediction correct here on Hip Hop Sports Report preseason. And so we had the Patriots winning the Super Bowl, and I'm a Tom Brady supporter. And so now you have Sherman. The Sherman memes are coming out the woodwork now, right? So there's a meme that I retweeted that had the 4 with Sherman doing the number 4, and it says, how many rings does Brady have? Which is hilarious, right? that was funny. I still think it's funny. But I tweeted it out because not so much to clown Richard Sherman as much as to praise Tom Brady. And, you know, Sherman got a little bit of humble pie, which, you know, you kind of had that coming when you run your mouth that much. Again, I don't think Sherman's a bad dude or nothing like that, but sometimes it's overkill sometimes, right? So I tweeted that out to my favorite comedian on Twitter. He goes by the name of Bill Burr. He's a Massachusetts native, diehard Patriots fan. Bill Burr was tweeting stuff out. I said, hey, why not? I'm going to send this picture to Bill Burr. Bill Burr retweets my photo. He retweeted it. And next thing you know, I get hundreds of retweets. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of retweets. I mean, it was favorites, retweets. I got new followers off of that. It was amazing. It was the single most traffic any one tweet I've ever sent out on Hip Hop Sports Report's Twitter account has ever gotten. That retweet by Bill Burr. Bill Burr has a lot more followers than we do right now. And so when he sent that out, people loved it. They were laughing. There was a few, sour pusses or whatever that was trying to like, oh, well, how many did they win without cheating? Really? So it was really funny, though. And so everybody's retweeting it, and quite a few people put at Richard Sherman or whatever his Twitter handle is. They added Richard Sherman in the tweet with the photo. So it's like at HHS Report, at Bill Burr, at Richard Sherman. How many rings has Brady got? With that photo of him right there. And I'm just thinking like, oh man, because you never know in this age, man, with social media. You just never know where stuff goes. Stuff, you send something out and it just goes out of your hands, man. And Richard Sherman tweeted last night, I believe. I mean, I don't know that he did. I don't know if he checked his mentions. Maybe he did. He seems like he could be a sensitive cat, so he might have checked his mentions just to see. Or maybe he did himself a favor and didn't. But there's a chance. I'm not saying there's a good chance, but there's a chance that he saw that tweet that I initially sent out with that meme attached to it via Bill Burr. So, Richard Sherman, allow me to extend an olive branch. In the off chance that you saw that and that you internalize it on some level, like, mm-hmm, all right, HHS report. Okay, I got you, HHS report. This is me, Jay Hicks, right here telling you nothing was meant by it. It was all in good fun. It's like you be having good fun with Michael Crabtree and all these other cats. It's nothing malicious, obviously. It's all in good fun. You know, I ain't mean to hurt your feelings in the off chance that it did. It was just funny. And like I said, a comedian of all people retweeted it and people got wind of it. And people that tagged you in it then retweeted that tweet with your name in it. So then even more people sent it to you. So I got no beef with Richard Sherman personally. I think he's a terrific defensive player and he's a Super Bowl champion. And he's great because I talked about him on the website just a week before. So about a week ago. So, you know what I'm saying? I got love for Sherm. That's all I wanted to say. I wanted to put that out there. I thought that was funny. Moving right along to the creme de la creme. This is the part I've been waiting on. This is the part you know it's coming. I'm pointing my index finger right into the mic right now. You know it's coming. Can we take a moment and appreciate what we witnessed courtesy of Tom Brady last night? That was his magnum opus, right? And this is a dude that he's had many of historic comebacks and memorable moments in the NFL and Super Bowl game winning drives and anything you could imagine. And Tom Brady, what he did last night trumps all of it. If you didn't know nothing about Tom Brady, you learned about what he's all about last night. His team was down 24-14 with less than 15 minutes left. He's going against the best defense in the NFL that has all the momentum. The Patriots were in trouble. In fact, they punted on their first possession of the fourth quarter. I think they missed on a third down conversion, and right at the start of the fourth quarter, they're giving the ball back to Seattle. And even still, I mean, even I, as big of a Brady supporter as I am, even I was a little wary of where this was going for the Patriots. But Brady, as he always is, was money. He was cash money when it mattered most. I mean, down 10, they have two significant drives. Unless you're going to score quickly and throw a bomb, which clearly wasn't in the game plan of the Pats, they had two drives in them in the fourth quarter, and they needed to convert both of them into points or else. And they did just that. Tom Brady against the league's best defense. And I don't want to hear about them being injured and banged up and stuff, because even though they were, those guys were still out there. You know? Those guys were still out there. And nobody was saying that stuff when Tom Brady threw that pick in the first quarter. Everybody was loving that. My Twitter feed filled up with deflate, inflate football jokes from a whole bunch of Twitter hacks. You know what I'm saying? What Brady did, though, was he had to score in each scenario. And that's exactly what he did. In the fourth quarter, Brady, I believe, was 13 for 15. If you like the ESPN QBR scale or whatever, where they try to measure everything that a quarterback does somehow and calculate it and spit out a number, Tom Brady, I think he was 97 on a scale out of 100. He was a 97 in the fourth quarter. He led the first drive and scored to Amendola. The second drive, he scored with about 2 minutes and 50 seconds left, or 2 minutes and 20 seconds left, something like that. Why do I have to speculate? It was 2 minutes and 2 seconds was left, actually, when Edelman caught that pass that they went back to after Edelman burned him the first time, but Brady missed the throw on the previous series. Then on this time, Edelman kind of spun him around and got open for that game-winning touchdown. Brady was magnificent. He was 8 for 8 on that last drive, again, against the Legion of Boom, who, by any statistical measure, just about, was easily the best defense the last two seasons. Considering what they did to Denver's defense last year, it's not insane to call them one of the great defenses of all time. When we think about the great defenses, you know, like the Steelers of the 70s, or the, you know, the old Orange Crush, or the Purple People Eaters, or, you know, that Hall of Fame Rams defensive line from like the 70s and the Ravens of 2000, the 2002 Buccaneers. This was one of the great defensive performances we've seen. And how can I forget the 85 Bears? This is one of the great defensive teams that we've seen in recent years. And Brady marched right down the field on them twice when he needed to do it. I got this audio from NFL Network, so all our audio quality goes to NFL Network. Audio rights or whatever, all that stuff goes to NFL Network. But listen to what Julian Edelman had to say about Tom Brady after the game.
Earth. He's won four Super Bowls in the modern day era with the salary cap. He's been to six. I'm a huge Joe Montana fan. I love him to death. But Tommy's number one.
Congratulations, Julian.
Thank you.
Couldn't agree more.
One.
Couldn't agree more.
One, two.
It pissed me off last night because prior to the game, I was watching NFL Network, and they asked the question. I think it was Michael Robinson, Michael Irvin, Deion Sanders, and Kurt Warner, I think. And they're asked the question, if Tom Brady wins, is he the greatest quarterback of all time? And generally, and I think Willie McGinnis was there. Generally, the consensus of the group was, I don't really know. You know, it's hard to compare eras, and Tom Brady's great, but he lost two Super Bowls, and I don't know. You know, he's kind of good, but you know, maybe not so good, and he might have cheated, and you know, that was what it was. You know what I'm saying? And I was infuriated watching that because, again, the last two times that Peyton Manning has been in the Super Bowl, the man who Brady is most compared to, the man who he's measured against by far more than anybody else, the last two Super Bowls, and I remember because I watched it with my own eyes. I am not making this up. I don't know if it was on NFL Network necessarily. Maybe it was on ESPN, but it was a group of pundits on each occasion when the Colts played the Saints in the Super Bowl and when the Broncos played the Seahawks in the Super Bowl last year. On each occasion, they posed the same question about Peyton Manning. If he wins this game, is Peyton the greatest quarterback ever? And everybody unequivocally says, yes. Yes, he is. Why does Tom Brady still not get that respect? Even this is before the game. He's already been to six Super Bowls. He's going to play in his sixth Super Bowl. He has two Super Bowl MVPs. He's the winningest quarterback ever in the NFL, the highest win percentage in the regular season, the most amount of victories in the playoffs period, as far as raw numbers, in playoff history. What more does he need to do? He's got two MVPs. He's like fifth all time in passing yardage and touchdowns. What else does he have to do to get your respect? I don't understand it. People have this love affair with Manning and they hate Brady. I guess it's the association with Belichick and this alleged cheating stuff, which is garbage. They have, again, I said it on the podcast last week, there's no evidence that Tom Brady himself committed any foul play on the Deflategate thing. And then they came out today and even said only one of the footballs was actually 2 pounds below the legal limit. Not 11, which is what they said 2 weeks ago before the game. And started all this investigation, and Tom Brady and the Patriots exercised that demon last night. Because all these people are talking about they can't win without cheating and all this football nonsense and are clowning them on SNL and all this other stuff. No! They came back and won that game. And they beat the same team that Peyton Manning got destroyed against last year, which is yet another demon that was exercised. You could not have scripted a better game for Brady. If you're a Brady fan or a Patriots fan and you're sick of these BS narratives that exist about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and his ranks as compared to the other great quarterbacks in the history of this league, you could not have been happier with the outcome of the game yesterday. You couldn't. The only way this could have been better maybe was if he actually beat the Giants. I guess that's like the only thing maybe. But when you consider the fact that Brady has had no significant running backs in his entire career. I mean, he never played with anybody as good as like Edgerrin James. I don't even know if he's played with anybody as good as Eddie Lacy. and you look at what he's done. I mean, he had Corey Dillon, who was kind of over the hill. He had Antoine Smith. in the first Super Bowl. He had Lawrence Maroney. He had Danny Woodhead. He had... these guys are journeymen. Who are these guys? Even this year, the Patriots had a different player lead them in rushing each month. Each month, they had... it was Ridley, Vereen, Blunt, and Jonas Gray. They all led the team in rushing 1 month out the year. What's the constant? It's Tom Brady. He's the constant. Bill Belichick is there. And Bill Belichick, you know, you got to take your hat off to him. He was great last night for the majority of the game anyway. He's one of the greats of all time. You can't take it away from him. But I do believe if you have to cut up the credit pie and issue out slices based on merit, Tom Brady gets the biggest piece of the pie, because Bill Belichick was a sub-500 coach in Cleveland, and he was a sub-500 coach in New England before Tom Brady became the starter. If there's one thing I gotta owe an apology to Belichick on, it's his draft day decisions and the way he picks players and evaluates players, because he finds these guys like Jamie Collins, like Rob Ninkovich, like Edelman. He gets these guys out of nowhere, and these guys are real players. And that's how you win in this league, is not overpaying guys. Not overpaying guys like Logan Mankins. You know what I'm saying? And no knock to Logan Mankins, but I'm just saying, like, you got to negotiate the cap in a certain way. And I was highly critical of Belichick after the Week 4 game in Kansas City, where everybody threw dirt on my boy. I was highly critical of Belichick at that time as far as him bringing in players. I still think he could have brought in another weapon or two at receiver that was better to help Brady out, but apparently it was still good enough to get the job done. So... but you consider Brady's never had a lot of help at running back. He's never had a lot of help at receiver. He had one great year with Randy Moss. Aside from that, he got injured the following year. And then he had some tumultuous years with Moss after that. So basically, it was like one really good Randy Moss year. His next best weapon is Gronkowski. Well, Gronkowski is injured all the time. This was the second full season I think Gronk has played in his five-year career. He was healthy for his entire rookie year, where he was a rookie, you know what I'm saying? Ever since then, when Gronk has been healthy at the end of the year, they've gone to the Super Bowl, which was like last year. But the year when they lost to the Giants last, Gronk was healthy, but then he got injured on the going into the Super Bowl, and he was playing on one leg, basically. Well, they had a healthy Gronk, and I told y'all on the website that that would make a difference in this postseason, and it did. But Gronkowski's the Tin Man or whatever. He's, like, never 100% healthy. They lucked out this time around. So you can't say that Gronkowski's some type of Hall of Fame receiver, because he's got to string together a few healthy seasons before we can say that. So... you have Moss and Gronk, but they both come with asterisks. And after that, who do you have? You have Wes Welker. You have Edelman. You have Amendola. You have David Givens. You have Deion Branch. You have Troy Brown. You have Jermaine Wiggins. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have Algie Crumpler. You have Dante Stallworth. At best, these guys are pretty good players, but none of them are like Hall of Fame caliber players. And then when you look at the defensive side of the ball, everybody likes to point the finger at Brady's defense and say that's the reason why they won the Super Bowl in those early years. And I'm not going to front. They had some very good defensive players on those teams. I don't know if any of those guys, though, are slam dunk Hall of Famers, with the exception of, say, Junior Seau, the late Junior Seau, who was over the hill by the time he got to New England, but he was still effective. Seau he's going to the Hall of Fame this year, so... he was there, but they didn't win the Super Bowl that year. Even the year when Randy Moss caught all those touchdowns, they didn't win the Super Bowl that year. They never won a ring with Randy Moss. So even the Randy Moss argument kind of is like, well, they were great, but they didn't win. Then you look at, like I said, all those other receivers. None of those guys are superstars. They're just not. I mean, Wes Welker, is he going to go to the Hall of Fame? Maybe. He caught a lot of passes. I don't know. Is Brandon LaFell going to the Hall of Fame? Is David Givens and Deion Branch and Troy Brown going to the Hall of Fame? I don't think so. These guys are not superstar receivers like Jerry Rice, like Marvin Harrison, like Demaryius Thomas. They're not even Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson. I mean, they're just not. So, the moving parts are all around Brady. But getting back to the defense real quick, you know, how many slam dunk Hall of Fame defensive players has Tom Brady played with? Ty Law? He ain't no slam dunk. Richard Seymour? Not a slam dunk. Vince Wilfork? Not a slam dunk. Teddy Bruschi? Not a slam dunk. Rodney Harrison? Not really a slam dunk. I mean, these guys are all borderline at best. You know? None of these guys, I think, are you can book it. They're going to the Hall of Fame the second they hang up their cleats. Now, some of those guys might get in, but a lot of them won't. Lawyer Malloy, you know? So, I mean, some of these guys, we would have seen them already in the Hall of Fame if they were that good. They're already been at Canton, but they're not. So, I don't understand where everybody comes off saying that Brady is not the greatest. When you throw in all the salary cap stuff like Edelman was talking about, I mean, this is just where you shake out at. He's the greatest we've seen. He's the best quarterback I've ever seen. He's the Michael Jordan of this sport. And what we saw last night was his Game 6 at Utah, 1998. That was it. That's as good as you're going to get against the best defense in the league, down 2 scores in the fourth quarter when your team is dead in the water and got nothing going on. That's it. That is it.
Yeah. Not a mic is low now.
And to steal a phrase from my man Bill Burr, if you can't do the math on that, then I can't help you. I'm sorry, man. And he's got every other Super Bowl record you could ever want, too. I just got to throw that in there, man. He's got every playoff record, every Super Bowl record. He's great. And we should have expected him to do that because we saw him do the same thing in the Super Bowl against the Giants, the first Super Bowl. The Giants were all in his face. That defensive line was pounding him the entire game, had him on his back the entire game. And when the game was on the line, when it was time to make it happen, it was time. What did Tom Brady do? With Seymour, OCU Manura, Strahan, OCU Manura, and Justin Tuck breathing down his neck, he marched him right down the field and scored the go-ahead touchdown to Randy Moss with 2 minutes left. Defense just couldn't hold the lead. So we should have seen it from before. We saw it against Baltimore 2 weeks ago. So this is who he is, man. My hat goes out to Tom Brady. Round of applause for the greatest quarterback, at least of the Super Bowl era. You want to go way back to like Otto Graham or whatever. I don't know. You can, but I mean, this dude is Jordan. If you love Jordan, there's no reason why you shouldn't love Tom Brady. And I'm exhausted, man. I've been going at this for like over 50 minutes, and I'm a little tired, man. So, I had a lot of energy, man. I was a ball of energy all day and all last night. Got to wrap this podcast up. I will say that you got to shout out the city of Boston, man. They got like 9 titles in like 11 years or something like that, or 15 years. It's insane the run that Boston is on. You got to tip your hat to them. And then one last thing, I actually forgot to mention this. The actual call at the end of the game by Pete Carroll. I don't think I touched on this, but Pete Carroll deserves a lot of the blame for that. I'm not going to front y'all. Like, y'all may be wondering, I can't believe I've gone all this time and hadn't mentioned that yet, but Pete Carroll, for not giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch. Yes, I think Marshawn Lynch would have scored the go-ahead touchdown. And there was like a 50% chance that they would have let Lynch score, just like they did against the Giants with Ahmad Bradshaw. So, it's crazy that on second down with a timeout left that they did not hand the ball off to Lynch. If you want to throw it on third or fourth down, I think that's a little more defensible. But I don't know, man. You also got to give Russell Wilson a little bit of blame. As great as he's been this year, he gets a little bit of blame too because he did not have to throw that pass. And Ricardo Lockett, the receiver, got beat to the spot. You know, I mean, these guys all get a little bit of blame, but you got to give more credit to Malcolm Butler than blame to Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, and Seahawks. So, amazing Super Bowl. If I forget anything, I'll probably throw it in an article. You'll probably hear from me again. You'll probably hear another podcast where I'm running my yap about Brady. Just deal with it, man. He's the GOAT. He's the best quarterback I've ever seen. He's the best quarterback of all time. Tom Brady is the man, and he's now got 4 rings, which he should have had at least 4 by now. Many years ago, the 2 to the Giants, 2006 when he lost to the Colts in the AFC title game. They should have won it that year. The year he got hurt, he blew out his knee. They could have won it that year, probably. I mean, he was due. He was due his 4th ring. And I'm glad my man came through. And I hope you all learn your lesson. Don't you ever throw dirt on my boy. Twitter.com/HHS Report. Facebook.com/HHS Report. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website. This is the preseason podcast of the year. I am a parched and exhausted Jay Hicks behind the mic. Thank you very much for listening to me yammer for an hour about the Super Bowl. I love you guys for listening. Thank you so much. Shout out to all my new followers from the Richard Sherman, Bill Burr situation. I appreciate y'all. I hope you like what you heard tonight. There's plenty more of this where that came from. And if you love hip hop music, we're all about that too. I haven't forgot about the hip hop stuff, but we've been so entrenched in NFL. We just had to talk about it, but I'm gonna come back with some hard with some hip hop stuff. We got a lot more Tales of the Tape to get out there too, man. J. Cole drop, Joey Badass drop, Nicki Minaj drop, Lupe drop. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. So there's always something going on at hiphopsportsreport.com. Thank you very much for listening. I love you. Talk to you later, y'all. Peace.
We started out mopping floors, and now we front row at the awards. Number one for the last 20 years. If you real, motherfucker, scream cheers. Motherfucker, scream cheers. Yeah, and it is what it is. He wanted to shine at the swap meet. To the white boys, got him in that hot seat. Only love it when I hair long. You should listen to this beat through my headphones. Money long, number one, 20 years strong. Fuck a gym, I am him, Andre Young. G5s to 6-4s, Dre got him. If the bitch bad, I got her in red bottoms. Great weed, nice homes, bread proper. Tech 9, one chamber, top shotter. Bentley coupe, new yacht, my helicopter. Born broke, real nigga, straight out of Compton. The fuck you magazine niggas want from me? I rewrote the game, nigga, now talk money. All black on my Al Capone shit. I built the house, nigga, get your own shit. I only love it when her hair long. You should listen to this beat through my headphones.
See y'all niggas. Hit the switches on that shit one time. Huh. Let the top down. I came a long way from the weed game. 20 stack seats at the Heat game. And I'm still strapped with the heat, man. Can't be stepping on a nigga feet, man. A-Bass sneakers came from the D-gang. Cousin was a Crip, said it was a C-thing. Brown bag money in a duffel bag. Fuck them all with them, then we got a double back. The homie whipping chickens in his mama kitchen. On a mission, say he did it for his intuition. Real niggas dreams coming to fruition. Stumble but I never fall, leaning on my pistol. I only love her when the ass fat. We still listen to this track in my Maybach. I'm just trying to be a billionaire. Come and suck a dick for a millionaire.
It's just different. I know it feels different. I only love it for eyes brown. Play this shit while you play around with my crown. King H.O., y'all should know by now. But if you don't know, meanings on the wall in all my rooms. Niggas couldn't fuck with my daughter's room. Niggas couldn't walk in my daughter's socks. Banksy bitches, Basquiat. I ran through that buck 50 Live Nation running me. They working on another deal, they talking 250. I'm holding out for three, 275 and I just might agree. XD boy used to park my Beamer. Now look at me, I can park in my own arena. I only love it for weave new. I'm still a hood nigga, what you want me to do? Been hopping out the BM with your BM. Taking the places you can't go with your Badium. Screaming copy DM until I'm a dead poet. Robin Williams shit, I deserve a Golden Globe, bitch. I take an ace in the meanwhile. You ain't gotta keep this calendar, it's just a freestyle. Fuck rap money, I made more of crates. Fuck show money, I spent that on drapes. Close the curtains, fuck boy out my face. I whip the coat, let the lawyer beat the case. Murder was the case that they gave me. I killed the Hermes store, somebody save me. Stunting to the max like wavy. Oh shit. Oh, stunting to the max, I'm so wavy. Used to shop at TJ Maxx back in 83. I don't even know if it was open then. I ain't no Oprah then. Had the XL80 bike. Loud motor, they be like, damn, when I'm coming through, ring. Had a grill in 88. Y'all niggas is late. You got all that, right? I love this shit like my own daughter. I spray these niggas, baby, just like daddy taught you. Young.
It's just different.